From one islander to another, Isle of Wight Radio proudly presents John Hannam Meets.
Hi, and welcome to another John Hannam Meets. I went to a world premiere at the NST City Theatre, Southampton, and came away enthralled by a brilliant production called SS Mendy Dancing the Death Drill. And a couple of days later, I went back to interview one of the stars of the show, Jack Ellis, known by millions as Jim Fenner from Bad Girls and Harry Mason from Coronation Street. And also, I discovered a few days later a surprise guest who also knows quite a lot about the SS Mendy. My first guest then is Jack Ellis. Nice to see you again, Jack.
Nice to see you again.
Last time we met was at Malvern when you were doing Great Expectations.
That's right, yeah.
Loved the show.
Yeah, it was a good show. Yeah, a long time ago that was. I can't remember now, but that was a very expressionistic version, wasn't it? It was very sort of lots of. I think we had white makeup and rather
yes,
wonderful,
you did.
Slightly outlandish costumes.
Yes, yeah, you
was
did.
A good show.
Millions know you as Jim Fenner from Bad Girls and Harry Mason from Coronation Street. But today, mainly, I want to talk about a brand new show I saw you in the other night at the NST City Theatre, Southampton. And I haven't stopped thinking about it since.
Well, that's a very good sign.
Fantastic. SS Mendy Dancing the Death Drill.
That's right, yes.
It's an amazing production, and it's mainly a Cape Town-based company, and you, isn't it?
Well, it is, but well, it's the Cape Town-based company. I came to this in a slightly circuitous route. I was at drama school briefly with the director of the company, Mark Dornford May. Basically, they are a sort of musical theatre leaning towards more classical opera and theatre, but they do a version of the Magic Flute, for instance, but they only use marimba, so that's the only instruments really they use, and drums, and you know, it's very African music, but doing classic pieces like Magic Flute. And they did A Man of Good Hope, which was the last one, which is an adaptation of a piece about a Somalian boy coming down into South Africa, escaping from all the horrors of war there. And then this one is the SS Mendy, which is the story basically of a group of black, they're called native labourers in the play. They were commandeered in order to be able to build trenches, to cut down wood, to supply ammunition to the front. They weren't allowed to fight, they weren't given guns, they were given spades. And they were to go and support the fighting men on the front. And so they were recruited. There was something like almost 700. They were trained in Cape Town, drilled. And then they were put on the ship, and the ship came over to here, and reached Southampton, Portsmouth. Then it left in order to be able to go to Le Havre, and on St. Catherine's Point, the ship sank. And basically, it was rammed by another ship. It was caught in fog at 4 o'clock in the morning on the 21st of February, 1917. And another ship, the SS Darrow, was travelling towards it and crashed into the SS Mendy. And the SS Mendy sank, the Darrow steamed on, and almost all the black labourers' support all died, all drowned.
I've come over from the Isle of Wight today, and of course it happened south of St. Catherine's Point.
St. Catherine's Point.
And someone I've known for a few years, a diver called Martin Woodward, he actually discovered the wreck.
Yeah.
1974.
That's amazing.
So there's Isle of Wight connection.
Of course there is. Of course there is. And the bell was only discovered recently, I believe, by someone, I think last year. And it's rather mysterious. There was a meeting in a car park where it was passed over. I don't know quite what. It sounds slightly shady, but they found the bell. The bell is now actually, I think, on display, not far away from here. It's the Black Titanic. It's a story of a dreadful tragedy. And of course, there were many, many, many people, because we all know millions died in that war. But this is a hidden story. It's really been slightly swept under the carpet, partially due to the fact that the South African at the time were not wanting it to be, in a way, they didn't want these people to be known as heroes, which they were.
Jack, what I like about it, when you actually come in, you're on stage and mingling, and that, I think, sets it up perfectly. Mm. And the emotion starts from about the first minute, I think, because it's that sort of production, isn't it?
Well, I think there's something about the way the piece is done, and it's a kind of theatre that I'm coming back to. When I started as a young actor, I was a founding member of a company called the Actors Touring Company. And we did very simple productions of classic plays using basic instruments and also using just a floor cloth and telling a story. And there was only about six of us or seven of us in the company. But we did plays like The Tempest, and we toured all over the world with it. And it's simple storytelling. And really, what it's about, there's no fancy stuff, there's no video in it. It's just basically humans telling a human story. And I think that it's something that appeals to me very much, especially at this stage of my career. In a way, I feel that I'm going back to where I started.
What I like about it is when I go to a show and the people that are just off set, they're still enthralled by the production because I was watching you and you played drums for a few minutes, didn't you? But I like to see the people heavily involved just off stage, if you like.
We were discussing that today, funnily enough, and it's really actually very important for us to... We are watching everything that's happening on stage. We are not looking at the audience. We mustn't watch. You know, it's actually quite easy sometimes, or, you know, it's quite inadvertently something happens. And we have to maintain total concentration on the piece. In a way, it helps the audience concentrate on the piece as well. But also, we are serving the spirits of those men who died. You know, we really are. And especially here, and there's something very special about that. And this points of concentration, you know, for anyone who's listening who may be wanting an aspiring actor or works in the profession, I will understand what a point of concentration is. And that has to be very clear and is very, very important. And it's an ensemble piece. I just had a friend who's come to see the show who said, what's amazing is that there are no egos on stage. There's a collective ego. But there's no one individual saying, oh, this is my bit, here I go. And that's something that's very much part of the...
It's a team effort, isn't it?
Absolutely.
What I like about it also is, at the end, the actors sort of came and talked to the audience, mingled with the audience.
Yes.
And when you watch it, I had an uneasy feeling because of, you know, how the black people were treated. And I think as you come out of the theatre, you're thinking about that.
Yes.
And that touch of when they come out, I think is fantastic.
That's great, and that's very right. And I mean, I'm glad that you've had that reaction, because in a way, it's sort of saying this is a story, it's a true story, but we aren't here now, and thank you for coming, you know, and thank you for witnessing. And it's a way of engaging and embracing and saying thank you. And without being, you know, it's quite tricky, that stuff. You know, you want to be careful with breaking that thing between you and the audience. But I think with this, it's there's something about this company that is enchanting. And I think the audience kind of gets to want to touch.
Exactly.
Hands, you know.
If it was pantomime, Jack Ellish, you'd get booed, wouldn't you?
I'm afraid I would, yes. But I've heard that. And that's happened to me several times before, because I played Captain Hook many times.
Yes, I know you have.
So it's but there's no one shouts, he's but they're behind you.
Do you feel when you're doing it as sort of you're bossing the blacks about and giving them a rough time? When you first came on the script, did it make you think a lot?
Well, the thing about it is it's a devised piece. So a lot of what I do is actually devised by me with the company.
Is it?
Yeah. I didn't get a script through the post or anything like that. I went to South Africa, we workshopped, we worked on scenes from the book. It's a book, The Dancing the Death Drill, by Fred Khumalo, who is a writer who lives in South Africa. And basically, we've taken bits from that. There's another book which we've taken bits of, the historical book, and then looked at scenes, and then we've rewritten and re-dialogued, as it were. I am, in a way, colonialism. I'm the enforcer of colonialism. Mm. So I don't speak like that. I don't sit on the sort of top deck and sort of watch all of them playing around. I actually am amongst them. So I'm given orders, and I have to make them do what they want to do. And in a way, what he reflects is a kind of spine of racism that was inflicted, I think, on this country in a way through a lot of what happened through the building of the British Empire and through slavery, the use, you know, and, you know, in a way he's a symbol. So that by the end, I hope, and there's a very last speech that he has, you could hear on a Saturday night in the middle of somewhere a group of racist men. And let's face it, I'm afraid we've still got the same problem here now. Of course it's much reduced and it's getting better. We really are, you know, it's good. However, it's still there and it's still maintained. And in a way, there's a modern voice of racism at the end. So he reflects, there's a sort of arc, all of which we worked very hard on to make work And, you know, the idea is to turn people's stomach because it has to. Mm. People have to really hate me.
In a way, you're ashamed to be a white person at times in it, good. I think, when
that's
you're watching
fantastic.
It.
I mean, I'm sorry to say that. I don't. In a way, you see, the Africans, they have the ancestors are with them all the time within their culture. You know, in a way, we need to live with our ancestors a bit and investigate our ancestors a bit more. So you don't need to feel guilty when you watch it, but you certainly need to be aware.
Mm. A lot of potential for this worldwide, I would guess, don't you?
Well, we're here at the moment. We've only done, I think, 8 performances. This is a world premiere here in Southampton in the Nuffield Theatre. It's a co-production, brilliant theatre, you know, beautifully put together and beautifully staffed and very helpful. And, you know, we this is where we begin. The idea is to go all over the world, hopefully, with it.
I want to look back a little bit on your career before you go, because you're part of an acting dynasty, really, aren't you? Because obviously Robin...
Well, there's Robin. The dynasty stops there, really. My middle brother was a director.
Yes, he was.
Film and TV director, and lived in Hollywood for something until he sadly died at the age of 58. But, I mean, Robin is... I think he's in Poldark. I think he plays the judge.
Him in the original. He was the original Poldark.
He was the original Poldark, yeah. And then now he's in the new Poldark playing a judge. I think they've done that rather cleverly in order to keep the fan base happy. Because it was very, very... They loved their old Poldark. They never wanted anyone to tinker with Poldark.
No, but, I know.
But this Aidan, he's very good, I think.
I've got them all, the original ones. I've got the video set,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
It's nice to compare sometimes.
Yes, I'm sure.
I know you've done lots of good stage stuff. You played Horatio in Hamlet at Stratford for
with
a while,
with Mark Rylance, yes. With Rylance as Hamlet, yes.
Yeah.
And I did Much Ado About Nothing with him as well. I did Don Pedro in that. And that was that goes back to this kind of work, in a way, very ensemble. It's wonderful when you have actors who just give, as this company does. Because if you've got a good Hamlet, all your work's done for you as Horatio. You know, all you have to do is stand, watch, and be helpful.
You went around the world with Richard III as well, didn't
I did,
you?
Yes. Yeah. The old Vic production.
Been around a bit, haven't
I
you?
Have, yeah.
You went to America with that, didn't you?
Went to Brooklyn. We did Brooklyn Academy of Music, yeah.
As we speak, the Mayflower Theatre is only, half a mile from here, and I saw you in The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
That was another sort of gripping play, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very different piece, very differently put together and differently toured. But that was a film, obviously, originally. That was a good piece to do. That was very interesting. But it was more conventional than this in many ways. It was a good production.
Before I knew you, I used to shout at the screen at Jim Fenner in Bad Girls.
Okay.
Still fondly remember that, aren't you, really?
Yeah, I did. Weirdly, I was rung up the other day and asked if I would do a convention, which we're doing on October the 23rd. I think you might have to. I might not have full. I think it's in a hotel near the Heathrow Airport. We're doing a sort of, you know, revival convention. Come and meet us and let's see how we are. And a lot of the original company members from the first series and second series are going to be there, which will be a good event.
Wonderful.
It'll be fun, yeah. And you have to look up online on that one, but it's a sort of, you know, reunion, as it were. So I'm going to do that. You know, I have fond memories of that. I mean, that was hard work at times.
Yeah.
84 episodes.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. I've interviewed Deborah Stevenson a few times.
Yeah, and, she's great. She's
and you very two funny. Together were sort of very electric in that. Well,
there's another actor who just gives, you know, he's, you know, we worked, we sparked well off each other. And Linda Henry as well.
Oh, yes.
All of them, yeah.
I also asked her to do a few impressions because she's brilliant and she reeled a few off, you know.
Yeah.
I must just mention Coronation Street because you played Harry Mason. You did almost 100 of those, didn't you?
Did I really? It went by just like woof.
You came in hunted by three ex-wives and criminals and trying to hide some money, weren't you?
Yes, I was a bit of a bad boy. I can't really quite remember all that. I was at the betting shop for a while, which apparently is quite difficult to sustain, I'm told. Yeah. That was a good year.
Jack, when you go into an established soap like that, how do you find it? Because it's different to anything you've done. Bad Girls wasn't a soap as such.
No. It's interesting. I have a view of this, actually, slightly, is that I think audiences, when they watch a show after 9 o'clock at night, they don't believe that you're part of their family. They think they have a distance between you. Something about the watershed. After 9 o'clock at night, they see it as a piece of not a work of art, but as a piece of something else. There's a distance. If it's before, if it's like a soap, people tend to think that you are actually part of their family, and that they, and you can actually be met. You meet people in the street, and they kind of, you know, they actually think, oh, hello, blah, 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 start engaging with you. To be absolutely honest with you, and I'm going to be really straight here, I don't think I was particularly either good or comfortable in Coronation Street, simply because it was something that it was so fast for me and so quick, and it was a bit of a shock to go into. And you know, I you know, if it ever came around again, I wouldn't mind a short crack at it, but I certainly would have difficulty doing a lot of it again. There's a certain specific style that to it that it just didn't. I don't think I fitted into it very well. I mean, I'm probably not a good enough actor for it. But it was. I learnt an enormous amount by doing it because it was so fast.
You've done Versailles as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. Just done it. Yeah. Yeah. I played the governor of the prison.
Yeah, I was
going
to say you got promotion, yeah. Didn't you?
Yeah, I went back a few years and got promotion.
Yes.
Yeah. That's because I live in Paris now.
Do you?
Yeah, I live abroad now. I live in Paris and I work from there. And I've done one piece in French, but very short piece. But I'm working on it. I want to do more. I'm not one of those actors who desperately wanted to go to Hollywood ever. I want to do as many strands that exist within our profession.
Jack, I've interviewed quite a few soap stars who wanted to go to Hollywood. They went to Hollywood. They ended up back in the soap.
Back in, yes, I know.
That's happened to a few, hasn't
yes,
it? No. Just before you go, obviously Where the Heart Is, you did Strike It Rich.
Yeah.
And I know you've done Morse and Lewis.
Yeah.
What would be terrific is if someone, they offered you Endeavour, because that's a wonderful series.
Oh, that would be very nice, yes.
It would, wouldn't it?
Yes, if the producer is currently listening to this, goodbye, agent.
Because no one's ever been in all three, I don't think.
Yeah, that's my agent. Yeah.
Right, thanks for your time. So, an ambition other than sort of this current show you're doing, taking worldwide?
Well, no, the ambition is to carry on with this show, to take it around the world. But also, Izango is a very important company. But also, I work with Good Chance Theatre, who have just done The Jungle in the West End. It's just opened. And I set up the Good Chance, helped set up, I didn't personally, but we did Good Chance in Paris. I helped start it. And that's working with refugees, which was the Good Chance was originally a theatre that two young directors, the two Joes, set up in the Calais jungle, the refugee camp there. And I would, I want to carry on working with them. I want to carry on doing that sort of work and working with Izango, and there is an idea to build something in Cape Town, which would be a drama school for people to continue to make things really solid, because there's no theatre in Cape Town. There's no real theatre. I mean, there is John Carney and there is the Athol Foucault Theatre in Johannesburg, but there's very little. There's the Baxter Theatre, but there's no real theatre, not like this. And weirdly, Izango is not known particularly in South Africa. Known very well outside.
The reviews have been amazing, haven't they?
Well, we couldn't believe it, actually, because we really just came here to sort of open it and get it on. And suddenly we woke up to 5 stars in the Times,
yes.
5 stars in the Guardian, 5 stars in Broadway World, and we didn't even know that they were there. So obviously the theatre did a very good job in keeping it quiet. But it was, yeah.
I think you might be coming back here at one stage. I think so. I think right.
It'll be nice.
Can I wish your career continued success?
Thank you so much.
You're sort of in between shows, so I appreciate your valuable time.
Not at all. And, it's always a pleasure to meet and to chat.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And I followed your career with great interest, and I will continue to do so.
Good-o. All right.
Thank you.
Au revoir.
I'm Fenella Fielding. And whenever I can, I listen to John Hannah Meets.
We've actually just heard from Jack Ellis, and I thought on my way back home, I ought to get Martin Woodward, the diver, who actually discovered the Mendy back in 1974. And I'm in his wonderful house in Bembridge. Nice to see you, Martin.
Yeah, nice to see you, John.
You came on my show a few years ago, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I remember it well.
And you're still diving?
Still diving, still going underwater, still enjoying it.
How long have you been diving?
Commercially, 50 years this year. And recreationally, before that, probably about another 5 or 6 years. So coming up for between 50 and 60 years doesn't seem possible, does it, really?
I feel so embarrassed. I don't like going under the water.
Oh, it's another world. It's lovely down there. Silent, no people to bother you, no mobile phones. It's just peaceful.
I've talked to Jack about the, obviously, about the Mendy and the play, but I want to talk to you because you were the man that actually discovered the wreck back in 74.
That's right, yeah.
Did you know it was there or did you just come on it?
No, the strange thing is that I'd never heard of the Mendy, and back in the early 70s I was researching a lot of wrecks off the Isle of Wight because that's what I was doing, you know, going out and finding shipwrecks and diving on them. As a result of that, obviously the research was quite important, and you knew pretty much what was out there, even if you didn't know where it was before you went and found it. Ironically, the Mendy had never flagged up at all, which is amazing, and it's almost like it was a hidden wreck for whatever reason. I mean, they say that maybe for propaganda reasons in the First World War, they didn't want anybody to know about such a large loss of life because that would have been useful propaganda for the Germans. And also the sad fact that it was coloured troops on there probably had a bearing on it as well, you know, tragic as that is. But it was just a total surprise to me to go out and dive. You know, I was systematically looking in areas off the back of the Isle of Wight, out in the English Channel. And it was a total surprise because what I expected to find on this particular position was a vague report from the Admiralty saying there was an old lighter barge, you know, like a dumb barge type thing. So when I dived in not very good visibility, about 140 feet, you know, 40 metres, something like that, and found this ship, which was obviously not a lighter barge. It was a big, you know, good quality passenger ship, the remains of, with a lot of very nice looking fittings, which obviously meant it wasn't a tramp ship or anything like that. So it mystified me. In the process of further dives, I found a little piece of crockery, a saucer with a shipping company crest on it, which had B&A SNC on the crest. And when I went home, I identified that as the British and African Steam Navigation Company, which was a forerunner of one of the main shipping companies, Elder Dempster. And by continuing with the research, then I found that it had to be the Mendy. And then I got in touch with the Elder Dempster archivist, and we grew to be great friends. And then the whole story unraveled from there. And what a tragic story it was. Absolutely numbing to find out that 646 people died just off our Isle of Wight shores without any of us knowing about it. I was dumbstruck.
I've only just heard in the last two or three weeks the real story, but I know it shook you, and you didn't really want to go back that often, did you?
No. Obviously, to positively identify the ship, you have to do a few dives on it. I was diving on a lot of other wrecks at the time. And over the course of the next few years, I dived it a few times and recovered the items that you see in the museum because I thought it would be a nice memento, a nice memorial to those that were lost to remember that wreck. But personally, you know, I didn't feel inclined to go back there and keep looking for more things to bring up because to me it was almost like a war grave. And obviously this predated the Military Remains Act of 1986, where it became, you know, not ethical to dive on ships with large loss of life, be it merchant ships, and like a bit like the Wargrave rule on Royal Navy ships. So I wanted to leave it in peace. I didn't tell anybody where it was. I just kept it to myself. And obviously, as time goes on, other divers found out where it was in following years, and then other people went there and started taking bits off. But I didn't want to do it after that initial few dives.
In Jack's interview, he mentioned the bell, which he thought changed hands in a car park or something.
It did indeed. And a local reporter, Steve Humphrey, who had pursued this like a detective for 30 years, this story, we all knew that the bell had been recovered. There was a story a long time after I discovered the wreck. Someone had actually gone there, a sport diver on a diving charter boat or whatever, and found the bell. We never knew exactly where it was, but we knew it was in Dorset somewhere. And we had a fair idea of who might have it, but it was never actually proved. Well, obviously, whoever had that bell was probably worried the fact that they didn't declare it, that they could get into a bit of trouble. So they kept it quiet and it was hidden away for 30 years. Steve Humphrey pursued the story, and because he was so keen to find the bell, then this diver eventually thought, you know, he'd got to his 80s and probably felt a bit guilty about it, being hidden away in a garage or something, rather than on display somewhere to be a memorial to the ship. And he contacted Steve Humphrey anonymously and said, if you're at Swanage Pier at 7 o'clock on this particular day, you will find a package there addressed to you. And Steve Humphrey phoned me up that morning at 7 o'clock saying, I've got the bell, which was wonderful because it should be on display. And we're hoping that one day it'll come to our museum with the rest of the stuff.
You've got a museum out in Barnes.
Yeah, it's our 40th anniversary this year. We've been open since 1978, 28 years in Bembridge, and then we moved to Arrowton Barnes in 2005 and opened in 2006, and we've been there ever since.
So the bell should by rights come back to you, shouldn't it?
Well, it should really, because if it should be anywhere, it should be in our museum, because I found the ship, I identified it, I tried to buy the wreck to protect it, and I did everything I could to try and buy the wreck, but they just couldn't establish the definite ownership of it at the time in the early 80s when this took place. So if I'd managed to buy the ship, then the bell would automatically be my property, but I can only hope that the authorities see it from our point of view and think that it should be with all the rest of the collection of Mendy artefacts which we've got, which no one else has got. So, and we've got the whole story of the wreck there, so the bell should be with us, really.
I must say, I saw it quite recently and it's fascinating because I never knew much about it at all, but, you know, it's just incredible. Did you like the show, by the way?
Yes, I did. We were delighted to go across, and I've always had an affinity with that wreck. You know, out of all the hundreds of wrecks I've dived on, there are a couple of special ones. The Mendy is one, and as I said, there's a couple of other ones. And, you know, it's a very special story about these people coming from townships in South Africa. They'd never seen the sea. You can just picture the scene on that dark, foggy night in February 1917, being mown down by another ship and being thrown into the water. And this fantastic story about the Reverend getting them all on deck doing the death dance and saying, brothers, we die together, you know, this is what we came to do. And every time I dived on it, that tended to come back to me, and it's a very poignant story and very special in my mind. And we're going down to Soweto in November to meet again some of the relatives of the descendants of the in fact the great-great-granddaughter of the Reverend who did that wonderful thing of getting them dancing on the deck as the ship went down.
Gosh, so much emotion in that show. I kept thinking about it for a day or two afterwards. You know, it's that sort of show, isn't it, really?
It is, and it's very poignant, and it's very well done. I thought it was excellently done. You know, I'm not much of a theatre goer, and I didn't know quite what to expect. And it was riveting, really, and you could see by the reaction of the audience at the end just how much appreciated it was. And I think it was a great tribute to the wreck and the people who died on it.
It's been a great buzz to talk to you, particularly as I spoke to Jack Ellis, who's, well, the only white man in the show, actually, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
And he's got great hopes to take it all around the world, I think, with this fantastic company. And I just wanted you because you're the man that found it.
Yes, I'm very proud to have been the one that found it and unravelled the story because, you know, I was totally dumbstruck when I unravelled that story. You know, just from finding a wreck off the Isle of Wight, there have been a few others, you know, with quite moving stories over the years. But the Mendy, to unravel that story, you know, 44 years ago now, it doesn't seem possible it's that long ago, and the story is still alive. It still keeps surfacing, and the centenary last year was fantastic to see all that all those South African bands and South African relatives from the townships and, you know, all the dignitaries from Princess Anne and everybody coming to commemorate that event 100 years on was just, it was very touching, I thought.
You look very fit, Martin Woodward. Very fit.
still got a pulse and still up for an adventure.
Yes. That makes two of us.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated.
Yeah, you're welcome, John. Good to see you.
It's great. He's got a swell personality. He meets and greets the stars with such amenity. Good enough to make you coming out of the street. John Hannah Mead. That's right.
You've been listening to John Hannah Meets, and my guests today have been Jack Ellis and Martin Woodward. Martin will be back soon talking about his amazing 50-year career as a commercial diver. Please keep listening and don't miss it. Keep looking on the Isle of Wight Radio website, the John Hannah website, and YouTube for more John Hannah Meets new interviews. Bye-bye for now. Isle of Wight Radio.